First pitch scheduled for 7:05, but we need to go to the hotline. We're very excited about this. We've been looking forward to it for a very long time. We welcome to the show Basketball Hall of Famer Artis Gilmore. He's on the line with us right now. Artis, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you? Absolutely.
We are doing wonderful, and of course, you've got the book coming out. Here Comes the A-Train. Lots of wonderful stories. Had a chance to read through some of it a little bit earlier today. And, boy, I've got so many different questions for you. But the first thing that pops out to me, and, you know, for a guy that wasn't around really when the ABA was in its heyday, I've heard so many stories about the ABA and so many great stories that came out of it as a result. But my question to you is, having played in both the ABA and the NBA, what were some of the major differences in both of those leagues?
Well, if there was any difference, certainly the NBA had exposure, had access to the television, and plus their venues were sometimes in most occasion was much larger, and certainly they had probably no question a little bit more support than the ABA in the earlier years.
And in the first chapter of the book, it's titled A Night in Boston. You mentioned a lot of interesting things in there. But one of the things that stood out to me is that, you know, until your mid-teens, you really only knew of basketball to be played on outdoor sand and gravel courts or cracked uneven asphalt. That got me to thinking, when was your first game that you played on a legit basketball floor?
Actually, it was, in those early years, I had an opportunity to play in a larger city, probably my senior year, mostly. And there was a little small town. We played some in Panama City, and there was another little city beyond that was Port St. Joe, and that was probably one of the longest road trips. And they had enclosed facilities, and that allowed us to perform on an in-court play, had an opportunity to play an in-court during those early years.
How long of a road? You mentioned that was a long roadie for you guys. How long of a road trip we talking?
Probably about 90 miles, but you think in terms of in those earlier years, the bus, the maximum speed would probably about 45 miles per hour. I think they had the governor on there, and they would not allow us to travel very quickly. So that 90 miles, occasionally, at times it appears to be about, you know, 3 to 4 hours in length of time as far as the driving distance to that particular destination.
Wow. Okay. So that's a lot of time to spend in a vehicle, whether it's a bus or whatever it might be. And that's a lot of time to kill, especially as a high schooler when maybe you're not privy to what it takes to endure a long trip like that. You have a title. You have a chapter here also called Barefoot in Chipley. You grew up in a town called Chipley, Florida, and Barefoot in Chipley is actually, it's got a whole lot of literal meaning to it, because there were times where you did your day-to-day activities without wearing any shoes. Explain that to our listeners.
Actually, when I at the age of 12, I wore a size 12 shoe, and then the following year, when I reached the age of 13, you know, that's when that particular phase was, you know, I experienced that at 13 years old. My parents were unable to find shoes a size 13, so that made that part of that particular phase in the book a reality for me, not having access to shoes for the next year and a half or so. But barefooting in Chipley, then later on, they actually, the roads were not paved. There was actually dirt roads, and then later on, within a short period of time, they start paving the road, putting the pavement down, rocks, and tar. And so that was another particular area that was made it even more challenging.
Again, we're talking with Artis Gilmore. He's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. His book, Here Comes the A-Train, he's going to be signing some of those at the Barnes & Noble in Medina a little bit later on this week. We'll get to that book signing here in just a few, Artis, but I want to get back into some of the early stages of this book. Just so many fascinating stories. You know, you mentioned in there about your upbringing, and one of the things that really stood out to me were the stories you told about the ways in which you would play basketball, not in the traditional sense, because, as you mentioned in the book, there are a lot of instances where you didn't have a court to play on, per se. You guys had to really kind of use your resources in order to shoot hoops. So what kinds of materials and what kinds of things were you guys using in order to shoot?
We would take actually a balloon, and we would actually put tape, being very creative, put tape, wrap it up, and then, as you indicated before, use your imagination. Actually, we didn't have anything, actually a ball that would dribble, whereas you could have control of it. So then we just using your imagination with a basket. Well, the basket was like a bicycle rim, just hooked up against the wall of the house. As you indicated, Andy, that was the phase where we really used being very creative, using our imagination, playing, actually learning to play the game of basketball.
So you used a tire rim from a bicycle as the rim for a hoop?
For a basket, absolutely, yes.
Wow. Okay, well, that's called being extraordinarily resourceful. That's awesome stuff. Well, and as you talk about in the book too, I mean, those are some of the things that you really kind of had to do, because you didn't necessarily have a court that you could go to play. And it really kind of is incredible how the times have most definitely changed. There's also a story in there that you referenced about, as a big man, you really kind of envied a lot of the all-time great bigs. We're talking about Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, all those names. But you also talk about how you marveled at the play of Oscar Robertson. That was a little bit surprising to me. Not that you marveled at his play, but the fact that a guy like Oscar Robertson stood out to you was a guy that certainly envied the play of other bigs. What was it about Oscar Robertson that really stood out to you?
Well, Oscar just one of the really challenging players, and you know, we later on in the league they added to start recording rather the statistics and the triple doubles and the other phases of the game, where you know Oscar was just outstanding in those particular areas and the record book, but. Actually, by the first game that I had an opportunity to watch professionally, Oscar Robertson and Bill Russell, and that was my first time. I was in the Garden, and I traveled up to visit with one of my dear colleagues and classmates from school, and I had an opportunity to watch Oscar play, and the way he challenged a big man like Bill Russell. And some of the other bigs in the game, like Wilt Chamberlain, really truly impressed me. It was very impressive to me, and was certainly to the point where that you had to acknowledge an individual like an Oscar Robertson, which certainly brought the attention to myself and created a major interest for me.
Artis, of course, you know, you had a remarkable career in both the ABA and the NBA. One of the biggest names to come out of the ABA was Dr. J. Julius Erving, a guy that certainly everybody knows now as a household name. But, you know, what's fascinating about playing in the ABA is you probably saw a lot of other really good players that came along the way that maybe didn't get the notoriety that Dr. J. did. Maybe there was an injury, or maybe there was something that prevented them from getting onto the bigger screen and playing in the NBA. Can you think of any names off the top of your head? Guys that maybe were really good in the ABA but didn't necessarily get the chance to blossom in the NBA?
Well, you know, George Gervin made it. George McGinnis, who was just inducted into the Hall of Fame, Charlie Scott, Matt Calvin, of course, Mel Daniels, one of the great. There is no question a host of names that probably, and of course, Dan Issel, formerly for my teammate for a short period of time. And then, of course, he played for Denver. And then David Thompson, Larry Cannon, Mike Gale. They're just a phenomenal list of former ABA great players that, as you indicated before, probably will not be recognized in the record books, especially with the merger of the league coming about. So, yes, absolutely, just a host of phenomenal names from the past that was truly pioneers in the ABA. But as you indicated before, Dr. J is the one leading name that most the fans can identify with that played in it and the former ABA.
Artis, kind of piggybacking off of Bull's question there, was there an adjustment period to the style of game that was played between the ABA and the NBA, especially for a guy who was as physical as you? Did it take some time to kind of learn how the officials were going to call it in the two leagues?
Not at all. Not at all. Speaking to Matt, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yes, Matt, absolutely. Not really at all. I think, in fact, it was probably really kind of a unique style of play because the NBA made the adjustment by adopting the three-point play, which allowed the league, the players to the floor to spread and open up the game a little bit more rather than and the NBA was where previously earlier with the rules were with before they actually brought the three-point play in. You know, it kind of jammed up in allowed everybody to kind of cram down into the middle, but with great players that was able to stretch the floor like, you know, the young players today. That perimeter, being able to move behind the three-point arc and knock down shots, it opened up the floor and allowed the one-on-one and caused me to be able to utilize my strength as an isolated player on the low post.
What about from the player standpoint? Were there any rivalries kind of created between the two leagues? Did NBA players maybe think a little off about ABA players as they came into the league when the two leagues combined?
I don't think so at all. I think they were really happy because, as long as there was two different separate leagues, it allowed the players to negotiate, especially a player like Rick Barry. He was able to maneuver between the two leagues, and it certainly allowed players to be able to negotiate for a little bit more monies than they were able to when it was just one league. And once it became one league again, then there was really no room to negotiate. So I think the players were kind of happy that there was two different leagues. I mean, two separate leagues, and it certainly allowed them that the ability to be able to and negotiate and had some leverage, but not much during that time frame.
Sure. Basketball Hall of Famer Artis Gilmore is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And, well, you know, I always think about, you know, the world in the professional sports landscape at any level. I think it's always funny because people always have stories about traveling to and from, and some of the best stories come on the road. And it's weird how travel has just changed drastically. You know, thinking about your playing days to thinking about how these guys in the NBA travel today, most of these guys traveled on private jets. I remember Charles Barkley in an interview a few months ago said that, you know, when he was playing, a lot of times they would fly commercially. How did you guys get around? Did you guys travel by bus? Did you guys travel by plane? Did you guys fly commercially? How did you guys get to and from?
Well, in the early league, we actually flew a first class especially when the leagues merged, but in the earlier years. In Louisville, Kentucky, when I played with the Colonels, John Y. Brown, who was the owner during that time frame, he had he actually owned Kentucky Fried Chicken, so he had his own private plane. So we would have opportunities where we would be able to fly up to New York and play, and was able, after the ball game, be able to return back to Louisville within that same time frame. And as you indicated before, now the today's athletes have access to more. They have not only the private transportation, but they have access to, well, they have the funds to be able to access private transportation. So there's no question it's quite a difference compared to those days versus the earlier days versus what the access the players, the athletes have access today.
Well, and I'm thinking about you here, Artis. As big as you were back then, you needed that leg room, man. You kind of needed that private jet. It's tough for guys your size to fold up like an accordion and fit in on a commercial flight, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, really, to tell you the truth, that in the earlier years, you know, the aircraft, there was much more space on the airlines than they are today. After 9/11, there has been quite a few changes in the travel arrangements. Now, the planes, some of them are larger, but the space is much, much there's less space on airlines now than there were a few years ago, 25, 30 years ago. The space had just shrink incredibly on airlines, and there is not much space in first class, nor in the regular coach section of a plane. But, you know, of course, in the private, if you had access to private transportation, as you indicated, a private jet, then, hey, absolutely, there would be much more space.
Artis, do you get a chance to watch a lot of today's NBA? Do you still watch a lot of basketball?
Yes, I do. I think there's just been an incredible transition in the game, and I really do enjoy watching the game. And it's unfortunate there's only a select few players' names not recognizing, and it truly has become an international game with the players from across the world that's able to come to the U.S. and play, and it certainly has enhanced the league itself and made it greater.
Who are some of the guys in today's NBA that you enjoy watching the most? I ask you that because, you know, knowing the position that you used to play, it seems like that position's kind of gone away a little bit. The NBA's kind of gotten away from the traditional center. So there are a few still out there, but are there some guys that you really enjoy watching in today's NBA?
Sure, absolutely. I've enjoyed watching LeBron James just perform over the years. Been terrific. And I mean, before I departed, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, and today the young fellows from Kevin Durant. I really enjoyed watching him play. But you mentioned that the league has kind of changed, but the league has evolved. You know, even back in the earlier years when I played, there was a select few players that played with the back to the basket, but you had other players like, you know, Bob Lanier had the ability to move out to the perimeter and take you know, a little bit of left-handed jump shot. And then Jack Sigmund, you had Elvin Hayes, who, even back in the early years, go back even far as the Celtics, you had the old six play for the Celtics with Bill Russell coming out and setting a pick for Sam Jones, and they're rolling off, and, you know, Sam come off and take the jump shot, and Bill roll into the basket. And you had Karl Malone with, you know, Utah, and he and Stockton running that same basically play, a pick option. But if, you know, we just today, probably focus a little bit more on the way the center's especially a number of European players accustomed to shooting the ball extremely well from the perimeter. Steve Kerr has, worked extremely well with the young players that he have access to at the Golden State Warriors. But, basketball is sort of a move back and forth, and no, it is different. There's no question there is a difference between the time when I played with my back to the basket on the box. But, certainly the first and transition of the game and the way it has moved back and forth, and the players, very talented players, being able to shoot the ball from the extreme distance and knockdown shots, and the movement of the ball, the movement of the players, a lot is changing, and it is absolutely exciting to watch those evolutionary changes in the game.
Well, your book, Here Comes the A-Train, I've had a chance to read a little bit of it. Can't wait to finish it. I'm awfully intrigued. There are a lot of really cool stories in there, not only about your playing days, but about your upbringing as well. Artis, I know that later on this week you are going to be down in Medina at the Barnes & Noble for a book signing. What are the details here?
Well, we're going to be there. I think it's 6 o'clock to 7:30, and hopefully that a number of people just come by. If you're not going to purchase the book, we'd love for you to come by and just visit and say hello. We're excited about that, and I'm excited about being there.
And I know you'll be in the area starting tomorrow, right? Or are you already here? I know you're going to be at the collectible show, correct?
That's exactly right. I'm going to be there. I'm traveling. I'll be there on tomorrow.
Okay, very nice. So for all those in our listening area, you've got two chances to meet Artis Gilmore. He'll be in the area over the next few days. Artis, this was a blast, man. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Again, I can't wait to get to the end of the Here Comes the A-Train book. You guys did a nice job with this. Lots of fascinating stories. And again, Artis, we really appreciate the time.
Matt, Andy, thank you guys very much for allowing me to spend a little bit of time on your show. I appreciate it, and hopefully I have an opportunity to catch up with you guys during my visit in the area.
Absolutely. We would certainly love that. Yeah, very good stuff. Again, Artis Gilmore, Basketball Hall of Famer, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And if you're down in the Medina area, Matt and I were just there yesterday for the Medina County Fair.